Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
Hour number three coming up here on a Tuesday night. Sorry about that. Dealing with a little bit of a something caught in my throat here, and so I apologize if you've heard me cough a little bit. Don't have a cough button here when I'm broadcasting remotely. I think all of us in this audience will remember the very high-profile murder case, which resulted in the conviction of a Minneapolis police officer, Derek Chauvin. He was the guy who kept his knee on the neck of George Floyd back in, this would have been May of 2020, if I'm not mistaken. Held his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck for close to nine minutes. He was convicted by a Minnesota jury last summer. While his trial was about to begin, or maybe even underway, there was another shooting involving a police officer, a woman, a 26-year veteran by the name of Kim Potter, happened to be a white officer who shot and killed a black motorist by the name of Dante Wright in, I guess, an adjacent community to Minnesota, Brookline Center, Minnesota. Last summer, we were fortunate enough to have Professor Mark Osler from St. Thomas University Law School in Minnesota join us, also a former federal prosecutor. And Professor Osler joins us again tonight to talk about this case that is coming up quickly. The jury selection is now underway. Mark Osler, welcome back to Nightside. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dan. Thanks for having me back.
Well, thank you very much for giving us some time tonight. I remember the Kim Potter case, but I was wondering if you might like to brief it for the audience, because I'm sure you're following it very closely. And I think that coming on the heels of the Kyle Rittenhouse case, the Aubrey case in Georgia, you also have the Jussie Smollett case, which is underway in Chicago. This case is, I think, part more of the trilogy of the Rittenhouse Aubrey cases. And I'd love to get you just to refresh everyone's recollection and maybe take some questions on where you think this might be headed.
Yeah, sure. I mean, while this case does have racial overtones like those others, it has some pretty unique characteristics, too. What happened was that, Brooklyn Center is a suburb of Minneapolis, but in the same county. And so we're seeing it in the same building. The trial is going to be where the Derek Chauvin trial was. What happened here is that Kim Potter was a veteran police officer in that town, and she pulled over Dante Wright because he had expired tags and he had an air freshener hanging from the rearview mirror. So not big crimes here. But once she pulled him over, she identified him, realized that there was a warrant for him, and got him out of the car. He got back into the car. They feared he was going to drive away. And at that point, that's where the tragedy really happened, is that Kim Potter says, don't do this or I'm going to tase you or something like that. And then she yells, taser, 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 but takes out her service weapon and fires once and kills Dante Wright. Immediately realizes this is what she's done and says, oh my God, I'm going to jail. And so here the twist that differentiates it from the other cases is, when we saw Derek Chauvin kneeling on the neck of an unconscious man, it was pretty clear that he knew what he was doing, that was an intentional act. And here at the center of this case is that issue of mistake, that she just grabbed the wrong weapon. Now, admittedly, that's a big mistake to make, and one that a veteran officer shouldn't make, especially one who'd been trained in exactly that fairly recently before this incident happened.
She's charged with first degree and second degree manslaughter. We have manslaughter provisions here, statutory provisions. Can you break down, I didn't know you can break down, will you break down the first and second degree manslaughter provisions? Not charged with any form of murder in this case by the grand jury.
Right. And that's something that's different than the Sherman case, of course, as well. And what happened here is initially she was charged just with manslaughter in the second degree. Our attorney general, Keith Ellison, took over the prosecution and added the first degree manslaughter charge. And so that's much more recent, just in September that was added. But just to break it down, second degree manslaughter is a charge here. Provides that by the person's culpable negligence, whereby the person creates an unreasonable risk and consciously takes chances of causing death or great bodily harm to another, and the person dies, then they're going to be guilty of second-degree manslaughter. The interesting language there is that the defendant has to have consciously taken the risk of causing death, and that's where this mistake is going to come in. Now, the first-degree manslaughter...
Let me get back to the second degree for a second, if I could, Professor. Sure. She consciously drew a weapon. She did not realize it was her gun, her position will be, but right. She consciously drew a weapon. So I guess I'm a little hung up on the intent. In other words, she consciously drew a weapon, but she did not draw her gun. She drew her gun, but she did not realize she was drawing her gun. So there's negligence there. There's no question there's negligence, and there's a strong civil suit. I'm wondering, it seems to me that you could fit her under manslaughter in the second degree, but she also could be looking at an acquittal here.
Yeah, this is going to be a very tough case for the government. You know, I say this as a former prosecutor, that looking at this one, the equities are very different than what we saw with Derek Chauvin.
Right.
So this is a tough case for the prosecution to win.
So if second degree manslaughter is tough, I'm assuming first degree manslaughter is even tougher?
Yeah, you know, it's a little different, and in a way it might be easier, because this is relying on us. First-degree manslaughter provision that we have in Minnesota, that, you know, there's felony murder, where if you kill someone in the course of committing another felony, even if you didn't intend it, then it can become murder. And what this is sort of a misdemeanor manslaughter provision. And what it says is that if someone causes the death of another person while committing a misdemeanor or a gross misdemeanor, with such force and violence that the death or great bodily injury of the person was reasonably foreseeable, then they're going to be guilty of first-degree manslaughter. And here, the underlying misdemeanor that they're relying on is the reckless handling of a gun or another dangerous weapon. So, was she reckless in the way that she was handling the weapon? That's kind of a different question than consciously choosing a risky or negligent behavior. It's possible that the jury in the end may convict of first degree but not second degree manslaughter,
which would carry theoretically a tougher prison sentence, ironically.
Yeah, and it's not just theoretical here.
Well, I'm just saying,
go ahead. Guidelines. So, yeah, we have sentencing guidelines that judges tend to follow in a case like this. And the guidelines for the second degree manslaughter are about 4 years. But for the first degree manslaughter, it's a little bit over 7 years. So we've got a pretty big gap there if she's convicted of the higher charge.
Let's take a break if we could. I'd like to hold you till 10:30. Folks would like to call and ask a quick question or two, they're welcome. I'd like to get into the legal atmospherics, if you will, of what's going on in Minnesota, because the atmosphere is charged in this case, and how that could play as the trial goes on. I'd love to know how long you think this trial is going to be. Seems to me it's a fairly cut and dried presentation, although I know there'll be some expert testimony. My guest, Professor Mark Osler, St. Thomas University Law School. He is a former federal prosecutor in Minnesota. He knows the law in Minnesota much better than I do. And I'm learning a lot. I hope you are as well. If you'd like to join the conversation, this was a high-profile case when it happened. It's going to be a very high-profile case a week or so from now, a couple of weeks from now, and this eventually gets to the jury. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Ladies' line is 617-931-1030. Elizabeth is on that line. We will get to Elizabeth. Maybe we'll get to you as well. Coming back on Nightside.
It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
Talking with Mark Osler. He is a law school professor at St. Thomas University Law School, also a former federal prosecutor, and he knows the criminal justice scene in Minnesota better than anyone you could imagine. So let me, if I can, take it outside the courtroom a little bit. The atmospherics, the political atmospherics in Minneapolis and in Minnesota as a result of the Derek Chauvin trial, how much of a role is that going to play, do you think, in this trial? I mean, I can't imagine it will have no role.
Yeah, no, it definitely has a role. And one thing that it does is it sets expectations high that I think we saw, you know, that was a televised trial, as this one is. We saw a judge who handled the courtroom really well. We saw a good presentation by the prosecution. And we saw a conviction across the board on the charges against Derek Chauvin. And having those expectations set so high is going to make it hard for these people to live up to what happened last time, especially given that the facts are different and that you have a much more sympathetic defendant in play here that the prosecutors are going to try to convict.
She retired from the police department immediately after the shooting. And she seems to have expressed a great deal of remorse, none of which were expressed by Derek Chauvin, at least to the best of my knowledge. We've had these other cases. I think most people agree that the Arbery verdict was the correct verdict in Georgia. I don't know anyone who disagrees with that verdict seriously. I know that there are different points of view on the Rittenhouse verdict. I happen to think that Rittenhouse should have been indicted for stupidity, for introducing himself into that situation, but I'm not sure that the jury got it wrong in the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict in terms of the facts of that case. And I think the prosecution did a horrific job in having, you know, witnesses on the stand say things that were prosecution witnesses say things that were unexpected. Is Minneapolis now fatigued and tired and just wants to get all of this behind them? Or do you think that there's a substantial number of people out there who will be outraged if anything other than two convictions come back?
I don't think it'll be of the same quantum that we saw with the murder of George Floyd or what probably would have happened if that verdict had gone the other way. But yeah, people are very engaged. I mean, this is something that, you know, I'm getting calls all day about it. And, you know, today was the first day of jury selection and people are pouring through what happened today in jury selection, who's in and who was rejected.
How long, Professor, is this trial expected to last? It'll start this week. Are we looking at a 2-week trial?
Well, it's not supposed to start until next week. Actually, they're just going to finish up jury selection and start it up next week. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's wrapped up within a week. You know, there's going to be fewer witnesses probably. Yep. You know, one highlight of this is that something that came out in jury selection today is that Kim Potter's going to testify.
Heard that.
And she's going to speak on her own behalf. And that's always a risk. But I think we saw in the Rittenhouse case, for example, how that can be effective because his crying on the stand did seem to have an impact.
Well, in law school, we all learned you never put a defendant on the witness stand, particularly in a case like that. But it certainly, I think, was a surprise in the Rittenhouse case, and I suspect they've gone to school on that. Let me see if I get one quick caller in here for you. Sometimes my callers have better questions than I do. Elizabeth is in Peabody, Massachusetts. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on with Professor Mark Osler of St. Thomas University Law School. Got a question or a comment for the professor?
Yes, and good evening, Professor. I'm a little late to the party, so I'm not sure if you discuss this or if this is too far off topic, but what about Ghislaine Maxwell? What about that case?
Yeah, we're focusing on the Minnesota case. I didn't realize you wanted to talk about the Maxwell case. That's a different jurisdiction and a completely different set of facts. So we'll save that for some night later this week. Okay, I'll get someone
that's happening now, and what a cast of characters you've got to print. You've got former presidents.
Yeah, we do.
Let's talk about that, Dan. That'll be a great conversation.
We'll try that. We will try that. I give you my word, Elizabeth. We'll try it later this week. Thanks. Appreciate your call.
Hey, Dan, just one thing about that trial going on at the same time.
Yeah, sure, Mark. Go ahead.
It's a very different kind of situation. That's a case in the Southern District of New York in the federal court.
Yep.
It's one that I don't believe is being televised, and so we're just
absolutely is not going to be televised.
Things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, as the caller said, you've got a different cast of characters. You've got all these jet setters and princes and wealthy people who are, just performing the worst kind of abuse on kids. Whereas this case that we're talking about, the Kim Potter case, we're going to see a lot of people who are very relatable. Kim Potter herself, a working cop who had a good record for a long time, who made, I'm sure she's going to say this herself, a terrible, terrible, tragic mistake. And so it's just going to be a much more human side to this in terms of the characters that come through aren't going to be from the covers of fashion magazines. They're going to be the kind of people we see every day. Yeah. And that's going to make it, I think, easier to understand.
And there is no dispute about the result. I mean, Dante Wright is dead. Loss of life. There's no way that can be restored. And if she does get on the witness stand and she's not going to deny what she did. She's going to say she made a terrible mistake. I don't know the prosecution will be able to. The prosecution, I know, is going to be asking her about how could you, as I understand it, the Glock is on one hip, the taser's on the other. So how can you mix that up? I mean, I assume that's going to be the thrust of the cross-examination by the prosecution.
And if they can, I'm sure the prosecution is going to bring both those things in. They're going to talk about how they're different colors, how they feel different in the hand, how they are clasped differently on the belt usually and worn on opposite sides. They're going to go over in minute detail the training she had on this, including the express warning about not getting these two things mixed up. So, they're going to take their time. But, Potter testifying, going back to where you started with this, she's probably going to get up, and if she's well coached by her lawyer, she's going to start by saying, this was a tragic mistake, and I'm so sorry, and I'm so sorry to the Wright family that this happened.
But here's one final question for you. I always think back to the mistake that the district attorney Darden made in the O.J. Simpson case. Can you try this glove on? I wonder if at some point, in your opinion, the prosecution might take those two weapons, the Glock and the taser, and hand them to her and ask her how dissimilar they feel in her hand.
Boy, that would be unwise. I think most of us learned something in the prosecution trade, hopefully, from that OJ trial. But no, I don't think they'd do that. And they don't have to admit that kind of thing as a demonstrative exhibit. So, they'd be wise to avoid that kind of showboating.
Yeah, well, I just didn't know if it would make the point that, just a thought. I don't know if there's a difference in weight, certainly a difference in texture, I assume, a difference in balance. We'll see what happens, okay? If the prosecution does that, you heard it here first.
we should make a bet. I'd be willing to take
it. No, I'm never going to bet against you on a Minnesota case. Trust me on that, okay? I'll bet against you on the Vikings and when the Patriots play the Vikings. But
That's a pretty safe bet for you.
Mark Osler, thank you very much. Say hi to my friend Hank Shea when you talk with him. I talked with him earlier today, and I really appreciate you making yourself available for us here on Nightside, okay?
I'll do that, Dan. I'll be back anytime you want. Thanks so much.
Mark. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Professor Mark Osler of the St. Thomas University Law School, brilliant professor and somebody who has a wealth of experience, particularly in Minnesota law. I think this case is going to be a very interesting case, particularly as you see it unfold. I'm sure most of you remember the case. If you'd like to weigh in, I'll be more than happy to open up the phone lines here and where your heart is on this case. Is your heart and are you in sympathy with the family of Dante Wright? Their family member is now dead. as a result of a horrific mistake. It is not a mistake that Kim Potter is going to deny. There's no doubt about that. Do you have more empathy for what she went through? I don't even know under the circumstances, if you remember, and I should have asked Mark Osler this, the judgment of pulling the taser, because there was it was a really crowded situation. They were trying to sort of get him out of the, get Dante Wright out of the car, and she introduced herself into the situation. Similarly, I guess, although she's obviously an officer of the law, Kyle Rittenhouse, whether that was a wise decision. If you have some insights on this case, love to hear them, because we're going to be talking about this in the next couple of weeks when the closing arguments and the jury verdict comes down. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. There are a lot of lawyers in my audience out there. You know, I love talking about these types of cases and trying to figure out how one differs from the other, because they all are different, but they're sort of on a spectrum. Because in this case, as in the Rittenhouse case, as in the Chauvin case, as in the Arbery case, in the George Floyd case, I should say, people lost their lives. And the results are not necessarily going to all be the same. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Ladies' line is 617-931-1030. Let's handicap it. And if you'd like to talk about it, I'm open. I'm game. Give us a call. We'll take a very quick break for news.
You're on Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
Well, we do have some brave callers who have, I shouldn't say brave callers, callers who remember the case, and let's see what they have to say. Let's go first to Dick down on Cape Cod. Dick, welcome. First on this issue on Nightside. Go right ahead, Dick.
Thank you, Dan. Let's take all of these situations, everyone that is controversial, and let's take color out of the picture. I have never been tased, nor have I ever been shot by a police officer, because I don't allow myself to get in a situation where the police have to intervene. My parents were strict disciplinarians, and if I stepped outside the boundaries of what they had established, I paid a price for it.
Sure, yep.
And I think that if you look at the overall picture, the thing that's missing is a discipline within the family structure.
Well, I think that might be true, but I don't know, and again, I'm just trying to focus on these cases. Each yep. case is driven by facts. I think that the decision on the George Floyd case was correct. I think that Chauvin paid little regard for his life, and whether or not George Floyd was, you know, a candidate for canonization or not, he should not have been treated that way by Derek Chauvin. And if I was on that jury, I would have come back with a guilty verdict. In the Rittenhouse case, I think indict him for stupidity, for putting himself in that set of circumstances. But once he was there, I think that he had a right to defend himself. I think the Arbery case in Georgia came out correctly. I mean, what right did these guys have to try to, you know, execute a citizen's arrest? So I'm looking at this case, the Potter case. The guy's dead in the car. He's probably not, you know, a saint, but he gets plugged by a horrible mistake. Does she walk away, in your opinion, scot-free, or does she suffer some consequence?
I think she has to answer for her actions. You know, I spent a lot of time in the military, and in the military, if you made a bad decision, regardless of the extenuating circumstances, you had to answer for your decision. And they try to teach you to make the right decision well in advance of any type of situation. So this young lady pulling out her service weapon and shooting the guy thinking it was a taser, I don't buy. But she still has to answer
yeah.
for her actions. Wrong, right, or indifferent. It's not fair to the individual. Whatever he did certainly did not justify taking a life.
Well, that's true.
So but my seriousness of the crime, it does not enter into the picture.
But my question, if you've seen the video, she pulls out, she has the weapon in her hand, and she yells, taser, taser, taser. Okay. Unless she was acting and wanted to kill him intentionally, it was a horrible mistake.
Yep.
Do you put her in prison for that?
If
you
were,
as a juror.
In these type of situations, the human psyche reacts totally different to what, if you had time to sit down and rationalize, what should I do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, adrenaline, yep.
They're in a panic, yeah, they're in a panic. And they really unconsciously don't know what the hell they're doing. But in spite of that, you're still responsible for your actions.
I hear you. So you would come back, it sounds to me, like with a conviction of some sort.
Some sort.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
I don't know what the judge is instructing him.
Yeah, and of course, that's going to play out, and it's going to be, the reason we're talking about it tonight, Dick, is that this is going to be, I think, a fairly high-profile case, and I want my audience to be ahead of the curve on it. Dick, thanks very much. Have you called me before from the Cape, or are you a first-time caller?
Several times.
Well, do me a favor. First of all, thank you for your military service, and please continue to listen and continue to call, my friend. I thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great one. I got to get one more in here before the break. Going to go to George in Boston. George, next on Nightside. Your thoughts on the Kim Potter, Daunte Wright case. Go right ahead, George.
Well, I was going to talk about the police officer, Dan, that you were talking about.
Yes, her name is Kim Potter.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think that that woman may be not found guilty because it was a tragic mistake, Dan. You know, I seen the video, and she was trying to get that boy out of the car, the young man out of the car. If he had just cooperated, Dan, this wouldn't have never have happened.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, hindsight is 20/20, and if you or I were in that situation where we were pulled over with an out of date,
right.
I mean, the stop was a legitimate probable cause stop. She did not pull him over for any malicious reason. You'd vote for acquittal, is what I'm hearing you say.
I would vote for acquittal. Yeah, I would. Yeah. I don't think that woman went out and ended her career because she wanted to take somebody's life. I find that very hard to believe.
Yeah,
I think
she did.
A tragic mistake.
Hugely.
I know
tragic.
It's not stepping on somebody's foot, but it's a huge mistake. But the intent, there is no intent to have killed him.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the video, the only question I would have in the video is for her to utilize a taser in a situation like that. There's a police officer who's holding on to the guy, trying to drag him out of the car. She put the just by forget the fact that she actually used a gun by using a taser. It was a dangerous use of a taser with the other police in such proximity to the suspect.
Absolutely, Dan, but very, very chaotic situation. I mean, imagine being in that situation. It was very chaotic. You look at that, the videotape of that, it was just very chaotic. Mistakes happen, and it cost the man his life, but the woman, there's no intent.
Yeah, she did resign from the force, so she has paid a price. The question is that price an adequate price, I guess, and we're going to see how this plays out. I'm just delighted that so many of you are willing to engage in a conversation on this tonight. I really mean that.
Oh, and one more thing, Dan, if I could tell you, that you couldn't remember that Channel 4 station in San Francisco. That was an NBC affiliate.
Yeah, it was, and as I was looking at KRON, for a long time was an NBC affiliate, and it appears now to have taken some sort of an independent status.
One of your colleagues was a main news anchor woman there for many, many years. I think she's still there. Pam Moore?
Oh, is Pam still there? I remember Pam was a very nice lady. Yeah, there have been some other people out there who passed through who I know, but I didn't see Pam's name associated with it. But yeah, Pam was a delightful person. I wish she had stayed at BZ.
I think she did the news with John Henning for a long time at the noon. New
yes,
news.
You've got a better memory than I do, George.
Yeah, and actually, her I think she is like kind of like she does like probably a half hour newscast now. She's gotten older, like we all have.
Unfortunately, time gets us all. Hey, hey George, man, thanks so much for the call. I really appreciate it tonight, particularly. Thank you so much, my friend.
Take care.
Have a good one. That's a great call. We'll take a break. We got Alan in New Jersey coming up, Bill in Newton, Dot in Medford. Got some room for you, 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. And the ladies' line, a couple of openings, 617-931-1030. Again, some of you don't recall this case. I get it. But this is going to be a big case. It's not going to be as big as the Derek Chauvin case. But it's going to be a big case, particularly because of the geography and because of the fact a police officer is involved, a white police officer is involved directly in the death of a black man. It's just interesting to me as a lawyer to look at these cases and the circumstances. Who knows how they're going to come out? But we can talk about it, and I'm delighted you. I thought about doing this today, and I thought, well, my audience, will they be willing to take this one on? And you guys never disappoint. Coming back on Nightside.
You're on Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
All right, back we go. Let's go to Alan in New Jersey. I don't think Alan in New Jersey has ever called me before. Alan in New Jersey, welcome to Nightside. How are you?
Thank you. Good evening, Dan. No, this is my first time calling.
Well, congratulations. Give you a little round of applause there from our virtual studio audience. Are you a regular listener down there?
I am.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend. Go right ahead.
You're welcome. I just want to say, Dan, that Kim Potter was allowed to resign, and she did that to save her pension, I think.
Well, that could be. I don't know what the law is in Minnesota in terms of police officers or public servants. If they are subsequently convicted, I don't know if the early resignation protects the pension completely. I think it depends upon the different state involved, but you might be very, very correct on that.
Right. And also, I think with this case, to me, it's pretty clear cut. You don't say, whoops, I meant to tase you, but I shot you, sorry, and go home at night. Say you're sorry and go home. No, I don't think you can do that. She's got to go to jail.
Okay, so Alan, if you were the judge and the jury convicts, what sort of a sentence do you think she would deserve? What would be a reasonable sentence?
Well, whatever the guidelines are in Minnesota, like your guest had said. And
it could be anywhere up. It'd be generally between 4 and 7 years on these manslaughter convictions.
Well, I think that would be just. And also, I want to point out, when you had were talking to your guests, I don't think the issue of race really came up in terms of the facts. So I think it's pretty clear cut. Whoops, I shot you, and does Kim Potter expect to go home because she says she's sorry?
No, you made that point, and it's a good point. I did mention that she's a white police officer, and I think most people realize that the gentleman who was shot and killed was a young black man. And I did mention, I asked him about the political atmospherics. So, yeah. Okay, so you think it's going to come back as a guilty. You know, let's see. We'll follow on and do me a favor. As this case develops, I'd like you to continue listening and chime in whenever you like, okay?
Thank you, Dan. Good night.
Thanks, Al. Nice to talk with you. Have a great night. Good night. Next up, Bill in Newton. Bill, your thoughts on this case.
Dan, how are you?
Good, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So my thoughts on the current case that you're speaking about tonight, you know, I feel there'll be some. They had to be some. Have to be some jail time. You know, 2-3 years, maybe time served. We'll cut it down a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. I think she's been on bail. I don't think there's any time served at this point.
Yeah, but I just believe that there's going to be. There has to be some jail time there. But I'd like to make a point on the other three. Trials that have gone on now in the country.
Sure, go ahead.
I just think, you know, like you said, it's a high-profile one. I get this, but I think these cases and these trials are being out in the public now, and it's not helping our judicial system. And years ago, you never heard about any of this stuff. Stuff went to trial, you heard the verdict after it was done. Now we're in the courtrooms, it's on the front page, we're sitting on the courthouses. I think it's getting a little out of hand. But, Dan, I think it's getting out of hand right now for the fact that the way people are living their lives the last couple of years in the situation we're currently in, people got more time on their hands. They know what to do with. They're in front of that TV. It's all – they got to get away from the TV and the fair. And but it's like we're all stuck in a fishbowl right now. But, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I like the idea of cameras in the courtroom because I think it educates people as to the judicial system, to be honest with you. And, of course, we are guaranteed under the Constitution as American citizens to public trials. In other countries, they have trials which are very secretive. And I'd rather go to the extreme of having the public trials, but I'm also, you know, former television reporter. I felt it was easy to cover trial if you had a camera in the courtroom.
I just think the noise outside of the trial, you know, is what's...
Fair enough.
Getting more and more right now.
All right, sir.
You know, the left against the right, you know.
I hear you. I can't disagree with you.
That's what I'm thinking right now is that it just seems to be okay. The next thing that happens in our lives and in our everyday world, next trial, you know, the next crime and all.
Yeah.
It's like okay, let's get the spotlight on it and then let's get moving and get this on the front page.
Yeah, well, we've had some high-profile trials. We've had some high-profile trials, and whether or not it helps or not, it's open to debate. Bill, like, I want to get one more in here before the hour is up. Okay, thank you very much.
Take care.
Talk to you soon. We got Dot in Medford. Dot, what do you think? I have no idea what you're going to say.
Oh dear. Well, I remember the case well.
Yep.
And when these things happen, I had sons. You have kids. When that happens, all I can think of is, if that was my kid.
Yeah, sure.
If that was my kid, and she killed him, quote, by mistake.
Yep.
Oh, let me tell you. She needs to go for 8 to 15, and she'll go for 5. But she needs to, because there's no excuse for her killing that young man. No excuse.
All right, Dodd, you said it. You said it well. You said it clearly.
And by the way, I do not have a smartphone either, like the other ladies, and I never want one either. I got my land phone, so I could call Dan Ray, and that's all I care about.
Don't you ever stop? All right, Dodd, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Take care.
Talk to you soon. Have a great night. Good night, Mike in Boston. Mike, I'm going to try to sneak in here before the hour is up. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, just real quick, I just wanted to let you know that in Massachusetts, the legal standard for motor vehicle stops is reasonable suspicion. But I thought you said probable cause, but I could be wrong.
Well, no, I did say probable cause. She had probable cause to make the stop, meaning, in other words, it wasn't like she pulled him over because she thought he was a young guy driving a car. Go ahead.
She'll probably do some time, but we just need to realize that there's a tough job that these cops are out there doing, and with all of this stuff that's going on in the world, I think that case happened somewhere near one of the other highlighted cases that was.
Oh, it was in the same county as the Derek Chauvin George Floyd case. Yeah,
there you
go. Hennepin County.
So yeah, and I think that as we play this out, you know, from the comfort of our couches and whatnot, these cops are out there on the front line doing this real time.
All right,
and I'm not excusing behavior. She'll probably do some time, and she probably deserves to, but we just need to recognize that they're out there doing a tough job trying to keep us safe.
No doubt about that. You have no argument from me on that, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for your call. I got you in under the wire. Talk to you soon, okay? Thanks, Mike. Go take a quick break. If you're on the line, feel free to hold on. If you're not, dial in. We'll continue to talk about this into the next hour, and if it sustains, great. If not, we'll move to another topic. Coming back after the 11.